electromagnetic, strong and weak interactions,
cool,
are all predicted by the same procedure of extending some dynamical equations to make them local. So, for those who just arrived, I was just backing up to catch Neil up on some things he missed in the first lecture. That was a lot of the first lecture talking about those ideas.
Okay.
It's online now, by the way. You can listen to it.
Yeah. Okay.
If you have patience. Probably hard to listen to those without seeing me jump around. Okay. At the end last time, I defined the Hodge dual. Let me write the definition down again, and then we'll try and
work with it a bit.
So, the Hodge dual is a mapping from lambda p to lambda n minus p, which we noticed last time have the same dimensions. So we don't lose any information, and it's not hard to show that, in fact, we probably should show today, that applying this map twice takes you right back to where you were. And that is sufficient to show that the Hodge dual loses no information. You can construct the identity out of it. So you're not going to lose any information. The definition, if omega is a p-form, I1 through IP, bold D, X I1, bold omega here, through D, X I, P, then we define the dual of omega, star omega, to be, let's see, 1 over n minus p factorial. Then you write these same coefficients, I1 through IP. I'll make the use of the metric explicit this time. I'll go ahead and write G, I1, J1. So I need P copies of the metric, IP through JP. And now I need the Levi-Civita tensor, J1 through JP, JP plus 1 through JN. Always has N indices. With and then I saturate this with dx's, dx j p plus 1 wedged with dx's all the way through dx j n. And each of those indices, all what have we got? There are n indices here. There are p indices there, there are n minus, so there are two n indices in this expression. They're all summed from 1 to n, which is the reason we normalize it by dividing by n minus p factorial. I might have defined this with a 1 over p factorial. Yeah, I guess I will. In which case, there's a p factorial part of this coefficient. Just think of this as the coefficient, and then the p factorial just comes along. Where the Levi-Civita tensor is the anti-symmetric symbol times the square root of the determinant of the metric, or I should say absolute value of the determinant of the metric to the one half times the totally anti-symmetric symbol J1 through J.
Okay, so
there's the definition. What does it mean? So we need to do some examples. Take some jewels of things. Now, I've given you, as an exercise, I've given you the full three-dimensional case. Find a dual of everything in sight. A zero form, one form, two form, three form, and just see what it is. You can set coordinates x, y, z if you like, so the metric is the identity. You know, make that as simple as you like. But let's try a four-dimensional example. And just work through something almost familiar. We've talked about electromagnetism a little bit in space-time. Remember, we defined the vector potential to be the scalar potential and the three-vector potential for magnetism. Those together comprise a four-vector. The minus sign is because this index is down. I can make a one-form out of the vector potential. Like this. And it's just what it looks like. Minus phi dt plus ai dxi. Like that. And let me define F to be the exterior derivative of that. And let's see what it is. So I want to take D of this one form. Alright, so I could take a time derivative, then I'd have a dt wedge dt, which is zero. So it's only the spatial derivatives here, so I'm going to get the spatial derivatives of phi with the dx, and then which with the dt that was already there. So we have something like that. Then here, I'm going to have spatial derivatives and a time derivative. So I'm going to have a time derivative ddt of ai, and then dt wedge dxi. And I can also have spatial derivatives of this, call it partial j of ai dxj wedge dxi. Is everybody with me? Okay, what are these things? Let's collect terms. So we have minus, you know, this is just the gradient of phi. Let me flip these two and pick up a minus sign, so I get minus dai dt. And all of that is dxi wedge dt. And then I have the spatial part. Let me write out the spatial part explicitly here. So I'm going to have three terms. We'll have D1A2, so J is 1, I is 2, so we have dx wedge dy. Well, there are going to be six terms like this, right? So we're also going to have a term where we have D2A1 and dy wedge dx. And then we have four other terms. It's not too hard to see what these things are. This
Anybody remember what that is?
We solved the homogeneous Maxwell equations in terms of the potentials. What do we get? It's the top row and the left column. The first column and the first row of this two form. This two form is going to be a matrix, right? But physically, what is it? Minus the gradient of the potential, what would that be?
Minus the gradient of the potential is
zero.
Isn't it?
Yeah, the E field. Right, and also the ADT. When did you derive that last time? Well, that was months ago. You've forgotten. But
once, and I sort of followed them completely.
Okay, let me remind you real quickly. You've got del dot d is zero. The other homogeneous equation is which is it? The time derivative of one element. Let's see. Must be this. The curl of E. Must be DDT, is that it? Faraday's law? Is that the one that's zero?
And then, the curl of B would give Maxwell, it would give the Ampere-Maxwell law, right? So these are the two homogeneous Maxwell equations.
Right? This one immediately gives us B is the curl of some vector, which we call the vector potential. Then if I substitute that in here, I have the curl of E plus DDT of the curl of A equals zero. And I can write that as the curl of E plus DADT equals zero. The curl of something vanishing means that that thing is equal to the gradient of something. And our definition is usually minus the gradient, so we write it that way. So the electric field is minus the gradient of some scalar function phi minus the ADT. We took it to be just this, like in intro physics, we would have done that. We would have been dealing with static magnetic fields. But, that's exactly this, right? This is the electric field. Okay. What about the other part of this? If I look at this, I can write it as D1A3 minus D, or 2, sorry, minus D2A1 dy, dx which dy. I'm flipping this one. What is that?
That's the curl.
That's the curl of x. That's how you find b. That's going to be the z component of the magnetic field. And the four other terms fall into pairs that do exactly the same thing. So we get the magnetic field. Let's see now. We have to write it with an epsilon. Because, right, and so in Cartesian coordinates, we have epsilon, let's just write it this way, epsilon I, J, K, dx, I, wedge, D, x, J. So, you see, when we have dz here, I is 3, so J and K are 1 and 2. So we get 1, 2, and 2, 1.
There. So we get an anti-symmetric matrix with B filling out the off-diagonal part. So if I write F in components, F is a two-form. It's
see, well, this double count, so I put a half. It's some coefficient, and then we have d x mu wedge d x nu.
Four-dimensional thing. Mu and nu run 0, 1, 2, 3. And so we can write these components. What are they? Well, it's anti-symmetric because it's a two-form. And then, let's see, here, rho I, column 0. So the first column is the electric field. And then up here we have minus that. And then the off diagonal we have dz minus dy dx. The signs come from that epsilon. So those are the components of that two form. Okay, anybody have any questions on this? I've digressed into this so I have a nice four-dimensional two form to work with. I want to take the dual of it. So this is an aside, basically. Any questions on it?
I'm just trying to... I'm good through here, and I'm good through there. I'm just catching up a little bit.
Okay. So this combination B epsilon is what you're seeing here. The alternating sign comes from the epsilon. If you just, you know, pick some components of this. So the components are J, K. So pick, if you pick row one, column four, three. Let's see, this is row zero, one, two, three. So row one, column three, that's JK is 1, 3, which means we have B2 times epsilon 2, 1, 3. Well, epsilon 2, 1, 3 is minus one because it's anti-cyclic. You have to interchange the 1, 2 to get them in order.
Mm-hmm.
So you get minus B2, or BY.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So that's where the minus sign comes from. It's because the 1, 2 are flipped. So, you know, check component by component. You'll see that that's what you get.
And then on the EI, when DXI is, when I is 0,
uh-huh.
It wedges, DT wedges DT, and it's nothing, right?
Oh, sorry, I'm using a convention from last term where Greek letters run 0, 1, 2, 3, Latin letters run 1, 2, 3.
Okay, so...
So I've already...
Zero in there,
yeah, if I put it in there, it would be 0.
Right, it would be anyway. Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
Good. Okay, so let's look at the dual of... The two forms. Got a non-trivial example. Let's see what happens. So, what are we supposed to do? I'm going to work in Cartesian coordinates, so the metric is Minkowski, the determinant is minus one, absolute value of that's one, so that square root of g is just one. Okay, so what do? I have the component, I define this with a half here, you know, it's 1/2 factorial, so I have the coefficient f mu nu, 1/2 f mu nu. Now I need two metrics, and then I need E alpha beta rho sigma. Now I've saturated the alpha beta, then I get two forms. So the dual of a two-form in four dimensions is another two-form. And since there are two of those, I divide by 2 factorial. So that's the dual. Now, these two Those just raise the indices to give me F alpha beta. And what happens when I do that is I'm multiplying by minus 1, 1, 1, 1 on the right and the left. And what happens, that minus 1 hits this column, this minus 1 hits that row. So all that happens is the E changes sign and the B stays the same. So this is going to be 0, EX, EY, EZ up here, minus EX, minus EY, minus EZ down there, and B the same. EZ, minus EY, minus EZ, 0, EX, EY, minus EX, and okay, so I know what that matrix is, so I can just write that part using it. So the dual of F is going to be a quarter, and then we have F alpha beta, and this epsilon has the square root of the determinant of the metric, which is absolute value of minus 1, so that's just going to be 1. And then we have the anti-symmetric symbol. And then our dx rho dx sigma. Now let's break this out into x's and t's. So we have 1/4. When alpha and beta are 0, 1, row 0, column 1, 2, 3, 0, I, we have the components of the electric field. So if this is 0 and I, then we have epsilon 0, I, rho and sigma. What kind of indices are they going to be? Time or space or some of each? They go over all four.
Space, right?
They got to be space because we've already got 0 used here. So they're going to be some j and k, dx, k, j, sorry, wedge, dx, k. So that's when these are 0 and I. Now, we also get, we get those two equal to I, 0. We have to count when those are I and 0. Well, then we get minus EI, and we get epsilon I 0, and we're still summing over spatial indices J and K, and we can still write dxj wedge dxk. Well, if I flip those two, I get a minus sign, and it just cancels that, so I just get two factors like this. Then I have the spatial stuff. I have to worry about, all right, if this is I and J, then one of these is 0. So what I will have will be a quarter, and then I'll have, all right, what's F, I, J? Well, it's this cross B stuff. It's actually F on I, J, K, B, K, then what happens? That's a three-dimensional epsilon. That's just for convenience. We're really in four dimensions. But then we have this epsilon I, J, and then we'd better get, we're going to get either 0, 1, or 1, 0, K. Let's see. What do I need? L. L. 0. Or 0 L. And then we'll have D X L wedge D T. When I have 0 L, I get the same thing with these in the opposite order, so there's just a factor of 2. I'll just put a factor of 2 for that. For the remaining terms when these come in the opposite order. And I summed over all I and J, so That's the whole thing. Now, what does that look like? What do we want to do?
EIJ, EIJ.
These two epsilons?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can. I can write that as the three-dimensional IJK is it's just the spatial part of epsilon 0 IJK. If you probably minus that, because you get a minus sign from raising the 0. So, I really have epsilon 0 IJK with a minus sign, and epsilon, then what is it there?
IJ.
0 IJK again, or no, IJ. IJ L 0. Okay, so let's change the order. Let's move this to the front. So we'll have plus epsilon 0 IJK, epsilon 0 IJL. That's got to be proportional to delta KL. All right. These three are the same as those three, so those two have to be the same as well. If I sum KL over here, this is going to give me minus 24, 4 factorial. With a minus sign, because the epsilon, the four-dimensional epsilon up is minus the one down. So over here, I'm only going to get 4, so there's got to be a minus 6 there. 6? Yeah.
So the one we did last time, 6 over 15?
That was wrong, by the way. I just corrected it online.
Oh.
Yeah. we had things like delta I, delta J, K, delta K, J. We said that was 6. What is it?
4. No.
We're in 3D. 3D. What is it?
It's just 3. Oh, wait. Is it just 4?
We're in 3 dimensions. This is 3 dimensions.
Oh. 3 times 3 is 9.
Very good. Yeah. Okay, we said it was 6 for some reason. We were adding.
It's amazing that it worked out.
What?
It's amazing that it worked out to be a factorial of that. Like, this made it work.
It had to be a multiple of 3, and so we had some odds in our favor. But still,
it's pretty well, good.
Except it's much simpler. The factor is 1, in fact.
Oh.
It's a lot simpler. Which, of course, is a factorial. Okay. So, that was just a mistake. I've written the problems. They're online. And I put that correction in there. You can check. Now I'm a little worried about this one. Let's see. What I really would like to get is something like 2. I should be doing it the other way. Oh, I see. We're not summing over 0 is 6. 0 is 6, so we're not summing over 0. The only sum here is IJ. 0 is not changing. So if we sum over K and L, we're going to get 6, 3 factorial, not 4 factorial. On this side, that sum gives us 3, so we need a factor of 2.
Oh, there we go.
That's better. That's better. Okay, and that's going to cancel the 1/2 that's out front. So, I can write the dual of F as, okay, that term is just going to be, we're going to get a 2, so everything goes away. The epsilon goes away. We get a Kronecker KL And so we're going to have B sub K dx k wedge dt. And then for the time parts, we cancel a half. And epsilon 0 ijk with 0 held fixed, and I'm looking at the first term here. Epsilon 0 ijk with 0 held fixed is just epsilon ijk. It's just the three-dimensional. So I've got an e and an epsilon and the spatial thing times 2 e k epsilon k I j d x I wedge d x j. And if you compare that to what I had here, I probably should have had a half. Oh, I should have had a half because I'm double summing. That should have been j k.
Talking about that too.
And that should have been a half.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah.
I look at that, but I'm always quite sure stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, help me on this stuff. You know, if you got it, you know, I probably would have done that. Okay, so it's the same, except I've interchanged B and E.
Oh, what?
Right. So taking the dual is interchanging the electric and the magnetic field. And that's useful for some of the equations, in fact. We'll find when you write Maxwell's equations using differential forms that you get these inhomogeneous equations by working with stars. Okay, now what? We should start combining these things in every conceivable way. It's entirely possible I've gotten a sign wrong somewhere. I don't see one.
Maybe you got two sentences wrong in the cancel, so we're good.
Yeah. It seems to me taking the dual might, you know, replace E by minus B and B by E, or something like that. I mean, it might not be a simple exchange like this. It seems like taking the dual gives you... So I'm worried about whether I've gotten the sign right.
Well,
let's
see.
I lost that minus.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is, right there.
Oh, wow.
So, good. So, E is replaced by B.
That minus sign would go on the B. Because E, I, J, K here, that term corresponds with your B. So it would be plus E.
Let's see, we're doing
this term.
You're right. I see, you're right. Good. Okay. So this one's minus, that one's still plus. So what we see is that E in F goes to, it's replaced by minus B. And B in F goes to E. That's more like it.
They're both minus, though, because that's E down and that's E up, which is...
Spatial, it's the same.
Oh, spatial.
There. Okay, that's right.
Okay.
Everything. Okay. Okay, so the fields interchange and there's a sign stuck in there. And then that's the dual of the Maxwell field tensor. Now, how would you get the Maxwell equations? We have the tools now to do all of vector calculus. And we can do it in any dimension we like. So let's just do the basic div grad curl. Let's get all of those carefully now. Any questions on any of this? the problem I gave you, to find the duals of everything in sight in three dimensions would be easier, because you've just got the three index epsilon. The four-dimensional stuff and the higher-dimensional stuff takes a little bit of work to make sure you're getting the right things with your epsilon. The difficulties can be overcome, and you get the answer. So, you have grad and curl.
Did we do grad and curl in more than three dimensions?
Nope. They have generalizations to other dimensions.
Right.
But, let's look at.
Okay. The divergence of a vector. We have the gradient of a function and the curl of a vector.
So we want to know how to do each of those using differentials.
We know grad f is easy. What is grad f? All right, if we wanted to write this in general, we'd have to raise the index on a derivative. So that's the object we'd be dealing with. We know those coefficients. Those are just the coefficients of df. So there's a clear one-to-one correspondence with df.
Right? Df gives you those coefficients, you just raise the index. So df is exactly the covariant form of the contravariant vector grad f. So if df equals what's it going to be? It's going to be f comma I dxi, then grad f is just dij times the coefficients. You just take the coefficients and you've got it. Now, question is, it's okay in three dimensions. How about other dimensions?
So, does the gradient exist in other dimensions?
I think it does, actually.
Yeah. Perfectly fine. Any of these expressions with indices, I and J can run from 1 to n, and it doesn't make a bit of difference. Same formula that you would write in any dimension. So, it's okay in n dimensions, in answer to your question.
Okay, well, that one's easy. Now, the others involve differential operations on a vector.
That's going to give us more dimensions.
Well, let's see. This is grad. Let's look at div. Now, div requires the dual. It requires the metric. But using differential forms, we can derive a general form for the divergence that holds in any metric. It's really very nice. So let's suppose we have a metric Tij, and let's see what happens. I'm kind of skipping over the... I should do curl next. I really should do curl next. Sorry. Let's look at curl. Because we've already seen the components of a curl. You've done it for a problem. How about your first exam being a week from Wednesday? And consisting of all the problems so far assigned, including the next set of that.
So technical exam then?
Just call it turning in the problems. But let's make the problems due. That's an absolute deadline for change.
Right.
What I want you to do is I want you to finish up differential forms. I want you to do all the problems. I'm going to give you one more set, and I'm going to ask you to derive. You know Jackson's electrodynamics books. You do one. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but in the inside front cover, there are all sorts of vector formulas. I'll have you derive all of those, and I'll have you write E and M three-dimensional in three-dimensional differential forms. So those are probably the problems I'll add. I'll just give you a bunch of problems. I added another problem, another integrability problem, a simple one. I mean, it's along the same lines as the one I made up in class, but I made up another one too. You can play with that. Also, solve it. Okay, so what does the curl look like? Or in the problem I gave you?
It was D of two forms.
The vector is a one form.
Right. Yeah.
And I want to anti-symmetrize the derivatives of that.
Oh, one form.
So I just take D of a one form.
Right, yes, right.
So let's let Z be Vi Dxi, a one form. Then if we take D of it, I'm going to get the partial of Vi Dxi wedge Dx Dxj wedge Dxi, right? Like this. And we know that that gives us something like, we're going to have D1 V2 minus D2 V1 times DX wedge DY and other terms like that. And we know that those are the components of the curl, right? That's actually the K component of the curl. What do we need to do here to get the curl?
Wouldn't that be XY?
Yeah.
Zero.
Yep.
Okay. A little worried.
Yeah, and then y dz will be the x component, and dz dx will be the y component of the curl. So you can read the coefficients right off.
Right.
But
we're gonna need something like these divs to give us that minus sign on the middle term.
It's not so much the signs that are a problem. It's the problem is that we have a mapping between one form, right? We know that a one form for one form omega I dx I goes directly to a vector omega I up, given by just use the metric, where these are exactly those coefficients. There's a one-to-one mapping between P forms and antisymmetric covariant rank P tensors, 0P antisymmetric tensors. Okay, so the curl is a vector. So, I mean, you're on the right track, Jake. We need a vector here, and what we've got is a two-form. This is a matrix. The curl is not a matrix, it's a vector. How do we get a vector out of a two-form?
The
dual. Yeah. So, we know that star of lambda t, or star takes lambda t into lambda n minus p. So in this case, it takes lambda 2, the space of two forms, into the space of 3 minus 2 equals lambda 1. So the dual will give us a vector from this two form. And so if we look at the dual of dv, right? All of these things are forms. What is that? That's the dual of dj vi dxj wedge dxi. Dual of all that. And that is dj vi gjk gil ekLm. Okay, this thing had two indices. I raised them both, and then the resulting two indices here are summed on the first indices of the E. That leaves me one, so I only have a single GXM left here. And then I divide by one factorial. The factorial is the same as the number of DXs, okay? All the time. N minus T in general. Okay, so, there it is. That's sort of the curl, but not quite. What do we need here? How is that related to the curl? Well, what is the curl? All right, in Cartesian coordinates, we would just have things like di vj minus dj vi, and then what would we do with that? Well, we could just raise the index with an epsilon. E and epsilon are the same thing in Cartesian coordinates. I could just use an I, J, K here, like that, and a half since I'm double summing. And that would be del cross B, the K component. How does that generalize if I change coordinates? How do I write the Cartesian coordinate, or how do I write the curl in arbitrary coordinates?
Well, first you'd have to change that anti-symmetric symbol to the including the weighting.
Yeah.
The grain of the
country. Yeah, I gotta make that in E for sure.
Yeah.
What else do I have to change?
Have to raise the indices on it. They're all lower.
Yeah, well, I've more or less done that. I need a covariant derivative. But, oh, sorry, what were you going to say?
That's a wild N.
That is a wild N, yeah. The chord inspired me. All right, so what we need is a half E-I-J-K. Whoa, you come back!
Yeah, to join us. Oh, there's no way. Not yet. Not yet.
There, that's covariant, right? You need a bunch of Christoffel symbols for this thing.
What's the other over here, too?
The bloody mess. Well, here, well, that's a general metric, but
all right.
A partial derivative, right, the covariant derivative of a function is the same as the partial derivative of a function, so it didn't matter here.
Okay.
You could write that as a big D, but it's the same as the little d.
Oh.
Right, so we must buy this problem before. But now we're differentiating a vector, and, you know, we've got to do this. So, well, you guys know how to do this. You write the Christoffel symbol in the coordinates you have, and you anti-symmetrize those derivatives. And, you know, it actually might work out not so badly. Let's do it. There's a little magic that happens there.
It's three-dimensional.
I think. And it's covariant, so we have a minus. So we have V M gamma
MKJ. And we're going to subtract DK DK plus VM gamma MJK. What happens?
Oh, the two
that's well.
The Christoffel time.
Gamma symmetric.
So let you drop that. That's something that happens when you anti-symmetrize
a derivative of a covariant vector. Contravariant, let's see, does it go away? Yeah, I guess it goes away there too. No, it's not quite so obvious there. I don't know, does it?
With a contravariant vector, let's try it with a contravariant vector. Look what happens here. Alright, we're already in trouble. So, forget it.
Yeah, it's liable to get messy. I mean, we'd need a metric somewhere, and, you know, the two indices that anti-symmetrize are those two, so the symmetry doesn't, it cannot synize. It doesn't cancel. So, in fact, this covariant anti-symmetric form kills off the gammas and allows a coordinate invariant way to write this curl that's actually very tidy. So working from the differential forms is actually nicer here. Differential forms are coordinate invariant. You don't have to, if you change coordinates, you don't change anything with that pure expression there. That star dv, that is coordinate invariant. The coefficients change. You know, the dx has become d rho's and d theta's and stuff, but the pure form expression does not. So we're actually okay writing this as half EIJK partial J DK minus partial K DJ. Well, what did we end up with here? Compare the coefficient of star d d. The coefficient is dj di gjk gil eklm. That's the coefficient. Those are the components of some covariant vector. That maps to a contravariant vector if we just apply one more G. Let's call it WN here. And M. Then we have D, J, D, I, G, J, K, G, I, L, and look what's happening here, K, L, M. K, L, M, L, K, M. It just, the three G's raise the index, all three indices on E. We get E, K goes to J, L goes to I, M goes to N, and D, J, D, I. And let's see, IJ, we can move the end to the front, and we get exactly the components of the curl, except, let's see, that's right. The half is required because we've got this twice.
Yeah.
We can write this as exactly one half E N JK, let's say. DJ VK minus DK DJ equals the curl of the N component. N component. So it's exactly what we get. All you have to do is raise the index. So you turn the covariant vector to a contravariant vector. Right. Now, ask Jake's question. what happens in the n dimension.
It's not going to be a one form anymore.
That's exactly right. What happens? So suppose we're in seven dimensions.
Then you need...
We compute star DZ. What kind of object is it? Any more votes? What are you getting, Juan?
Oh, wait, no. Point.
Neil, Joe, Nathan, everybody. Hey, what do you get?
5-4.
Okay, these are 1-4. 5-D. I need 2-4. Would they take star? You're going to get a
yeah.
4-4. Yeah. Well,
Okay, yeah, you got 2 out of 3 here.
5-4.
5-4. Z is a 1-form. DV is a 2-form. Star of that is a 7 minus 2 form. 7 minus 2 is usually 5. depending on the day of the week. But so, a 5 form. You get a 5 form. Well, there's no obvious interpretation of a 5 form as a vector. So the issue with the curl, right? You can turn the anti-symmetrized, you know, you have this covariant thing here, right? I mean, the gammas drop out of it, so you have a coordinate invariant notion of a derivative. This dv is this anti-symmetrized derivative directly. That's a coordinate invariant thing. That's important. You know, that's what you're after all. You know, these anti-symmetrized derivatives are telling you something geometric directly. But they cannot be mapped to a vector. So, the curl, this is actually very much like rotation. Cross products are the same way. A cross product in n dimensions is not a vector. A curl in n dimensions is not a vector. Curls have to do with rotation. All right, the curl of a vector field is how much it's tending to circulate around some axis. Well, you need to get over the idea that rotation has to do with an axis. That's a three-dimensional illusion. Rotation has to do with planes. Rotations happen in planes. Okay? You can move in a circle in a plane. And if you're in seven dimensions, there are five dimensions orthogonal to that plane. There's no single axis around that which that rotation occurs. But there is a perfectly well-defined flow in a well-defined plane. So circulating things are two-dimensional. And so dv characterizes the circulation of a vector field in a plane. And you can find the components of that circulation in any plane in these higher dimensions. So there are many two-dimensional surfaces, and they're laid out right here. If I and j in dv ran from 1 to 7, well, there are seven choose two different planes to look at, which is, what is that, 7 times 6 over 2. There are 21 different planes you can look at in seven dimensions. You can have circulation in any one of those 21 planes, and it's tabulated for you right there. That'll give you the circulation in all 21 of them. Just figure out what the functions are, and you've got it. So that's all pretty cool. So we've understood a little something about higher dimensional flows, really. But we can just look at dv. In fact, dv is simpler than star dv, usually. In higher dimensions than 3, right, dv is always a 2-form. But star dv is going to be an n minus 2-form, and if n is bigger than 3, then n minus 2 is at least as big or bigger than 2. In four dimensions, they're the same size. As we saw here, f and star f
are both two forms. All right, so there's no reason to prefer. It's just a matter of what it is you're trying to get at. Let's do the divergence. Any questions on grad or curl?
What were you saying again about grad? I didn't get it. Instead of putting in a partial, putting in a covariant derivative.
Okay. DIF is partial. Yes. It's already covariant.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have any vector basis to rotate.
Right.
Next one, DO2 form something, right? DO2 form is a divergence. All right. How do we get a divergence? All right. We know what it is. What is it? Think of what we do. We take a derivative. Of a vector, and we get what?
Scalar.
So this is some kind of mapping that takes lambda 1 to lambda 0, and it involves a d. The only way we know of, the only way we ever need to know of, in fact, for taking derivatives is d. Okay, so we're going to start with one form. We're going to take a d of it. We start with a vector. Again, start with d. How are we going to get a scalar value derivative of that?
The dual of v. Take a d of
it. It's not all we can do. Okay, we've taken d of v and we get the curl.
Right.
And we can take star of that all we like. We can't take another d because d squared is 0. But there's only one derivative we get to take. So there are only two things you can do.
So that's why the law of Pythagoras is d star d.
Yeah.
Built into the cross, there is the dot product. Okay.
We can take dv and we can take d of star v. Right. Those are the only two ways to take a derivative. Okay, this is a two form. What's d of star v?
I guess it's a three dimensional vector in three space.
Well, you do a three. Well,
so one form.
Right.
D is the one form. What's star of it?
Two form.
A two form. What's d of a two form?
Three form.
A three form.
So there's only one value.
Now what do we do?
And start again.
That's a one form. No, it's a zero form.
Right.
Zero form is what we want here. Right, we want a function. Gives us a function.
Right.
So we want to take star d star. Star d star occurs often enough that we give it a name. We call it del. It's called the boundary operator. But it's useful to have del around. Right, here's a quick exercise for you. Compute del squared. In your head, right now, what is it? It's easy.
Star is 0.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Star D squared.
Everybody get it?
Star.
Yes. Star is 1. So the inside stars go away and you get a D squared.
Yeah.
So there's one exercise done for you. Okay. So, there's really nothing else it could be. Let's check. The way you do these is you work from the inside out. So the first thing I have to do is
find the dual of V. Well, I want to write VI, and then I raise the index, and now I use Levi-Civita JKL with a DXK wedge DXL. And I've got two of these, so I need a half. There's the dual.
You know, if I write with the side of this thing, I can make everything look bold. Even the indices. Now we take D of that. Well, let's be a little careful here. What's D going to differentiate?
D. All right, well, let's just G.
Yeah, G. Yeah,
it's
going to
hit all of this.
All of it. All of it, right. Even that E has a G in it. All right.
So let's be careful here. We want star. The one half is going to come out. And now we get a partial M of everything inside. Well, let's use this to raise the index on Z. So we get a VJ. This E has a root determinant of the metric in it. Now the epsilon is a constant matrix, so I can pull that out, JKL. And that's handy to do. So,
isn't there going to be another D since
D, 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 M, D, X, D, M, D, X,
D, M, D, X, D, M, D, X, D, M, D, X,
D, M,
D, X, M, wedge, D, X, K, wedge, D, X, L.
Good. So, now we take the dual. Okay, now, here's how you take the dual.
Everything in front here is the coefficient of a three-form. So, this is the coefficient. So, the first thing to do is write the coefficient without any change.
Okay, now notice the three indices,
M, K, L. So I need three G's, G, M, N, G, K, O, O, G, L, T. And then we need an E, N, O, P. And, no. What happened? No. Oh, and we're done. We ran out of indices.
Yeah.
That's it.
Enope.
Enope. Yeah, good. Okay, so let's raise the indices on that. So we have a half.
Let me bring all of this stuff to the front because we're not differentiating that stuff. It's just an E M K L raising the indices. Then we have dm of vj root g, and we have an epsilon jkl.
You can pull out that root g as the e on the left and some indices across there.
Yeah, right. So let's write this as an epsilon. So we have one half, then we have one over root g. Then we have this sum, epsilon MKL, epsilon JKL, and we can figure out what that is. Then we have partial M of root G DJ.
Okay, and now what is this? You remember your identity?
What's that going to be? Equal each other, so it's going to be...
Two delta, right now.
What are we going to do? With a constant in front. What's the constant?
What's
the sum of...
What,
if I sum MJ here, what do I get?
You were right. What do you get? 3 factorial.
Yeah.
Sum here, what do I get?
3.
Right.
So I need a 2.
Good. Okay. So I cancel the half, and I have 1 over the root determinant metric, and then the Kronecker changes those two indices to be equal. And we have what is rightfully called the divergence formula. We have derived the coordinate invariant expression for the divergence. So if you want the divergence in spherical coordinates, that's the way to get it. Use that formula. Questions?
So if we want to go basic Cartesian, we can just put ones in for those g's and we've got it.
And you see, you've got it, yeah. So the Cartesian thing is right. It's coordinate invariant, so it has to be right now in every coordinate system. So if we use the coordinate invariant of the differential form notation, we have just proved that that is the general coordinate generalization of the Cartesian formula partial m vm. Since it reduces to the right thing in one coordinate system, and we know it to be coordinate invariant, this has to be the generalization.
That would be easier than the norm.
Yeah, it's a lot easier.
This is the way to do it.
I think I'm just trying
to... Yeah, divergence, this is your formula.
I'm just starting to do that.
Yeah. You know, don't forget what you learned last term in general relativity. I mean, use the Christoffel symbols if you need them. You want something in a general coordinate system? That's the answer. Just write it down. You know how to do that? You know how to find the metric? So, you know, you've got some,
ellipsoidal coordinates or some dumb thing. You know, hyperbolic ellipsoidal
hoochie-wachie. Write the metric. Compute your stuff. You're good. You know how to do it.
I was going to say that would have helped me, but I don't like the end from the beginning.
Yeah. If
you have to put stuff in spherical coordinates, I mean, curl in spherical coordinates.
So I'll have you derive that, but use differential forms to do it. You know, it's just dV, and then you got to put the indices in the right places. But, you know, we got the formula for it. That's it right there. The only trick, okay, if you want to convert this to the vector component, let me make a note of this. Curl of vi. How do you write that in terms of vi? Well, we know that the curl of some vector, you know, the what component did I get here? The n. Let's use I. The I component of the curl is given by let's just use this formula right here. That seems like the simplest thing. So E I jk partial j vk, but alright, that I can write as 1 over the determinant of the metric epsilon I jk, and that's simple, I know what to do with that. Here, let's write this as partial j of quantity gkl vl. So put it in terms of the things you're given.
Oh.
All right, you need to stick a metric in there. But crank that out and you'll get the formula in Jeff.
Right, or your E&M book in spherical coordinates or whatever coordinates you want.
So, you know, adapt it. Use what you know about tensors and moving indices around.
And a lot prettier than the way we derived it in Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can grunge through the coordinate transformation and just do it. And you should do that sometime. I mean, it's like health food, you know. Eat a carrot once in a while.
I did that one, so I'm good.
Yeah, okay.
Selby? Have you had your Selby? No. Okay.
Runs through polar domain.
You had your Selby.
But this is a lot easier. This really is the way to do it. And it's always coordinate invariant, so you know you're getting the right formulas this way. Very tiny stuff.
So what I want to do is give you a bunch of problems. You know, I'll dream up anything I can find. One thing I will ask you to do is to write the three-dimensional form of Maxwell's equations in differential form. Let me give you an example. What do we have? Faraday's law, right? That's the wrong one. dBdt plus curl B. You know, all right. What I would ask you to do is write this as dBdt of some form expression plus, you know, this is going to be, you know, something like a dE kind of thing. So define forms EI dXi and B, you can define to be DI DXI. That's not necessarily the best way to define B, but since B is a curl, it's really a two-form. So, or you can define it to be DA, where A is a one-form. So that makes it a two-form. So you can take B to be either a two-form or a one-form. I think the equations turn out neater if you take it to be a two-form. So your Maxwell's equations, you're going to get some two-form equations and some one-form equations. That's okay. Write them in terms of these forms. So then, so B is dA. Let's say do it that way. So let's not do it that way. I'll write this up and put it online. Think carefully through how I want you to do it. So I'll give you those definitions. But so when I did F time with a coordinate, and you see that the equations, well, you don't see yet that the equations are really the thing. Maybe that's a thing for me to do. I'll do it in four dimensions. You guys do it in three. It's really pretty in four. In three, just leave the time derivatives as time derivatives. Don't worry about them. Just all spatial derivatives should be written using D, the three-dimensional D. And put everything in terms of a two-form D and a one-form E. And they'll look pretty tidy. They'll clean up nicely. J and rho, remember we have a four-current given by rho and a three-current J. So write J as a one-form, and rho is just a zero-form. So rho is elemental length is zero, this is an elemental length. This is an element of lambda 2. This is an element of it. So, that'll be good. I'll see if there's some other identities that I can have you guys work out. Just get yourself practice with this. Get good at it. Come with questions as we move along. Let me think what else I want to show you with forms. Let me do Maxwell's equations in the relativistic form. We've worked through that once or twice, I think. So you've seen it. It's very succinct if we go this way.
Very pretty. Yeah.
Have you got everything?
I got this board over here, but well.
Okay, you want me to write that up again, the problem? No, here, let me.
I write the PDF that is.
So we've got an exercise. Let E equal E I dx I element of sentence 1. B equals D A element of lambda 2. You can figure out what the components of that are. J equals J I dx I element of lambda 1. Rho an element of lambda 0. Function.
So
write Maxwell's equation. You're good over here, right?
Yep.
As I say, I'll write that out in a little more detail online. Now, for Maxwell's equation,
Lambda 0, that's just a function.
Oh, okay.
See you later.
More dimensions. Okay, so we know that we can define a one-form A mu v x mu, where these components are minus phi and the vector potential. So F, we did this part already, F is dA. That's a solution for the fields in terms of the potentials. That's not one of Maxwell's equations. But if we use the Poincaré lemma, and its converse, then it says that D of F, what's D of F?
It's going to be zero.
So this is a homogeneous Maxwell equation in terms of the field. Okay, we found F, right? What was it? You have it in your notes there? Let's go ahead and write this out.
Half F.
We had like an EI, was it DXI? DT or DT DXI? This is the form I'm thinking of. You see this?
Yeah, we've got that somewhere.
Was it DT with DX or DX with DT?
I don't know.
We can grab it again. Let's see. This is a DT thing, so I take a DX. This is right. And then we had a B thing, right? We had B I E I J K D X J wedge D X K. And is there a half with that or not? We had a half because we're double counting. Okay.
And then the energy. Yeah.
I actually wonder if that half is right. Because it
seems to work out right before.
1, 2, 1. Well, the thing is, you know, what I want to get
Now, suppose we have E1, so we're going to have E1, 2, 3, dx, 2, wedge dx, 3.
Yeah,
we're going to have E1 with E1, 3, 2, except that we want both of these, don't we? Because this tells me the 3, 2 component, and this tells me the 2, 3 component, right? With D occurs twice.
And then the 2 comes in the second time you do it.
When we take a dual, we may want to... Now, here also... See, I wonder if F should be twice this or something. Because...
3 divided by 1
times. No. The half is right. And because this is half of F. Alright, so there's a half on this side too. That's it. So if you multiply 2 by that, then you get the dx dt and the dt dx, so you've got an e here and an e here, but this half is what corrects it. So this is right. Okay, that's what I wanted. Just something to work with. So that's f. And let's look at what it means for d of f to be 0. All right. Now, we know if we put in the expression for E and D in terms of phi and A, it'll just be an identity. Because, D squared of A is going to be 0. But if I leave E and D in here, it's going to look like some constraints on E and D. So we know this has to be 0, and we expect to get some answers out of this. So if I take a dt of this, I'm going to have a dt with dt, and that's going to be 0. So, is that right? So I need to see x. Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I want. So I need a dj, ei, dxj wedge dxi wedge dt. I get a 3 form. And here, I can take a dx or a dt. If I take a dt, I just get a ddt of di eijk dt wedge dxj wedge dxk. And I can also take a spatial derivative here, in which case I get D, I've got a JK, let's take an L of DI, EIJK, DXL, DXJ, DXK. Now let's figure out what these are telling us. This all has to be 0, and each of these things is independent. What's the easiest way to get the information out of a 3 form?
Take the dual.
Yeah, let's take the dual of this thing.
It looks... Well, it looks like it might be simpler. We don't actually have to. The first part, let's not take the dual of this part. That looks to me like it's actually not going to be so bad. If I just rename these indices the same, I have dj, di. Let me explicitly anti-symmetrize with a factor of a half. Then dxj wedge dxi. Wedge dt. And this one's going to combine with it because I've got a dt and 2 spatial ones. So let me move the dt past 2 dx's, so that gives 2 minus 9 to the plus. Then I want to change the k to an I, so I'm going to rename I and k. So I get a half, then I get ddt of the rename I as k, rename k as I, and then we have dxj wedge dxi way to dt.
Okay, now notice, the dx's and dt's here, they're just a basis, right? They're a basis. I can, if this form is zero, which it must be, this has to vanish independently because there's no dt. They're independent components of some tensor. We're dealing with a rank 3 tensor here. So each component to that rank 3 tensor has to vanish. Once I impose the anti-symmetry on each term, I can throw away the basis. It's not telling me anything more. I can set these coefficients to zero as long as I've already got this anti-symmetry between the I's and J's. The dt, there's nothing to anti-symmetrize here. So, stripping the basis, what we get is, I can drop a factor of 2 as well. EI minus DI EJ plus DBK DT. Well, depends on the metric. I'll keep that for a moment. DK DK J I. That's going to be 0. Notice this is anti-symmetric on IJ already. But I don't have to take an anti-symmetrization there. It's already part of that epsilon.
We're combining these two.
Okay, I'm going to get another equation out of this.
Oh, okay.
This is just part of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So let me first part. Be explicit about that. What is this saying? If I put another E on this, suppose the metric's independent of time. Let's work with some fixed coordinate system like spherical coordinates. We're talking about free space here.
E on that first piece, it looks an awful lot like a cross-dilation.
Well, exactly, yeah. And this comes out. So if I multiply by E I J M, then partial J E I minus partial I J. I think we define that as 2 times the curl. And then here, this comes out because it's time independent, so I'm going to have E I J M, that's practically my name, isn't it? And then this one, what are we going to get? If I interchange I and J, I get a minus sign. So it looks like I'm getting a minus sign here. To write this as E I J K D B J D equals 0. And this, we've already decided, is twice Kronecker M K. And this is, okay, we've got I J, there's a minus here, so all of this is minus 2 times the K component of the cross product, or the M component of the cross product. So what we get canceling the 2 and the canceling of minus 2 is the curl of E plus dB dt equals 0. And that is one of the 2 homogeneous Maxwell equations.
That's the 1/2 that we had originally over here. So it's just divided by over.
Oh, I had one on both terms. I canceled.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Other questions? Okay. Then the second part. We have to have 1/2 partial L EIJK DXL DXJ DXK. That's got to be 0.
It's divergent.
So,
yeah, it's going to be a divergent.
Before I can strip the coefficients, I have to anti-symmetrize LJK.
the easiest way to anti-symmetrize LJK is to multiply by E LJK. So I can write this as a half. This is zero. Oh, I've got that. DL of B I root G and I J K. And notice what we've got is the divergence formula, right? We've got a half. We've got 1 over root determinant G. We've got epsilon LJK, epsilon IJK, partial L root G B I.
So not only are we getting Maxwell's equations, we're getting them in arbitrary coordinates. That feels good.
This is going to be twice Kronecker LK. And the 2 goes away. And we have the usual divergence formula. Usual, because we just derived it, right? And that is here.
So we get the homogeneous Maxwell equation by using, right, df equals 0 is precisely the homogeneous Maxwell equation. It follows as an identity by the Poincaré lemma applied to F written as a D of a potential. So all you need is a vector field, and boom, you're ready to go. Well, what else can we do with F?
Well, sorry,
start and then take D. Yeah, there are only 2 things to do, take D or start and take D. So we've taken D and we got 2 equations. Let's see if our luck holds. So we want to take del of it. Right? So we're going to get star D A. Right? It's like a Laplacian. It's almost a Laplacian, it's not quite. Well, yeah, I'll have you guys write the Laplacian. That'll be good, I should say. Okay, so look at D of star of F. What kind of object do we got there?
So that's a 2-form in 4 dimensions. So 2 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
A 3-form. It's the same thing, except with the MB interchange with the minus sign. We've already done star.
Yeah, we've written it down.
Right.
Now, lambda 3 is necessary to deal with, so let's convert it to star D star F. Yeah, let's take the dual of D star F. What kind of object is that? Right, 3 goes to 1. So it's a simpler thing. We end up with something simpler. It's an element of lambda 1, so we know right away there are 4 independent equations we're going to get. The right number. That's good. So, star D star F. We call that del F. And that star of D of, now we need star F. All right, F is F mu nu, and then we raise indices mu alpha G nu beta, and we use an E alpha beta rho sigma, and then we have a dx rho wedge dx sigma, 2 of those, so 1 over 2 factorial. There's the dual. We can raise the indices on the F. Nothing wrong with that. So, when we take D, we're going to have, let's say, D, alpha, beta, mu, nu, rho, sigma, what's another Greek letter?
Phi.
Phi. Every 5 for an index. It just doesn't look like an index. Okay.
F alpha beta. E alpha beta rho sigma dx rho wedge dx sigma. Still got the half. Get back to our loop 2.
What do you know dx phi?
Good. Oh.
Yeah.
Keep forgetting that. Never heard of a dx phi.
Maybe it's kind of sounds almost like a DXI and a DXI.
Maybe Gamma. Yeah, Gamma's not much better. What is tau? Let's do tau. Tau's almost an index. Sort of. It's got two parts to it. Not something that's sigma. No, it is sigma. Yes. Yeah. Iota?
Let's take the dual of this thing.
Okay. Dual of the three form. So look at the coefficient. All of that stuff is the coefficient. So we've got a tau rho sigma is three indices. So we've got a half d tau f alpha beta. Let's be careful to differentiate the whole thing here. E alpha beta rho sigma. Then we need g tau lambda g rho. Oh, my mu and nu have gone away. Good. I can use rho mu g sigma nu e lambda mu nu gamma. Dx gamma over 1 factorial. And that's our answer. Well, what is it? Well, we'll figure it out. We've got a half. Let's see. How do we want to write this? We could write the components. What I'd like to do. Okay. Let's write this as g gamma delta times g. I'm going to raise that up to be a delta. So what we have is e tau rho sigma delta, and then I lower that to a gamma, and then I've got these three t's. Then d tau f alpha beta. This is a root minus g epsilon alpha beta rho sigma. And
minus g or f is the value of g.
Same thing in space time.
Negligence.
Yeah, the determinant of the metric in a, actually this even works in a curved space time, is negative. So, same thing. Alright. Then I can pull this epsilon out and I can combine with this. So I've got a half and a straight g floating around just to make it covariant. Then this has a 1 over root minus g. We've got d tau of this stuff, alpha, beta, root minus g. This is looking a whole lot like a divergence. That would be the divergence theorem. And then we've got epsilon tau rho sigma delta epsilon alpha beta rho sigma. Let's figure out what that thing is. It's summed on two indices.
So, we can remember that. F equals dk. F equals 0. So, we have some... Where'd it go? Right.
1, tau rho sigma delta. Epsilon alpha beta rho sigma. Let me move this rho sigma to the end. So that's epsilon tau delta rho sigma, epsilon alpha beta rho sigma. So we have two choices here. We can have tau and alpha equal and delta and beta equal. Or with the opposite sign, we could have tau equal to beta and delta equal to alpha. We just have to figure out what lambda is. So trace or contract on, let's set tau equal to alpha, rho, delta equal to beta. So on this side, this becomes alpha beta. Whew, that was exciting. We get minus 4 factorial when we take the trace of the whole thing. Minus because there's always an A to 0, 0. In raising these indices, the metric has determinants, minus 1, so there's a sign. On this side, we get lambda. Then this becomes 4 times 4 minus then tau alpha, we get a single Kronecker 4. So this is 12, but it's supposed to be minus 24, so lambda is minus 2. So we make the replacement, and we have del F is star D star F is equal to, we've got a half. We've got this whole thing with a minus 2. For those two epsilons on the tail, we've got a G gamma delta. Let's take out the half. We've got 1 over root minus G. Then the tau of F alpha beta root G, or root minus G, F alpha. All right, well, this isn't so bad. In fact, these twos go away. We're going to get another factor or two. These two terms give the same thing because F is anti-symmetric. Right? Let's just go ahead and write it. We get minus, from the first term, we're going to have G gamma beta. 1 over root minus g d alpha of root minus g f alpha beta. Then we're going to subtract, which becomes plus because of this minus sign, g gamma beta 1 over root minus g partial beta of root minus g f alpha beta. And notice that these two are the same. Here we have a, that should have been, what happened? Tau became beta. Here, tau became beta. Okay, that's good. This one's wrong. This delta becomes an alpha. Yeah. Okay, so there's a relative sign between these two. If I interchange alpha and beta here, then notice this is on the second index of F. So if I interchange those, this is on the second index of F, just a dummy index, and then I'm just lowering that free index. So the two become the same if I flip those. So I can replace this by a 2. 2 times 1 is 2. Star D star F
Find my original F with a half in it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I've lost a half.
Did you take this picture already?
I did it again.
Okay.
This would have a half on this F. Let me just squeak it in here. So we have 1 over 2 factorial, 1 half F and you knew. So I'll just make these all 4s. This is nothing. Then this is a 4 that doesn't. That becomes a 2. So we have a half here and a half there. So we just get 1.
Okay.
Again, 1 over root minus g. Now, this looks just like a divergence. We know that this ought to be covariant. If we're in any Kautsky space, that square root is just 1, and that's a divergence. No problem. Is this, in fact, covariant? Notice that if I take the covariant divergence of F alpha beta, there's an identity here that's not going to be so pretty. But the gammas do something because of the anti-symmetry again. We're going to get an F rho beta gamma alpha rho beta plus an F alpha rho gamma beta rho beta.
Are you going to get a beta on both the rows?
Now,
you got a beta and a beta.
I'm taking a divergence, so I do get 2 beta. I have 2 betas.
Oh,
right.
It's just whether I'm correcting the first or second. So this, notice that's symmetric and that's anti-symmetric, so this term is 0. And the thing you can show is that this looks like the gradient of log root minus g. There may be a factor on that. But, You can write this formula as exactly that divergence. So the divergence of an anti-symmetric contravariant tensor written covariantly still gets this divergence formula because that one goes away. The extra gamma term that you would expect in a divergence, a covariant divergence, is not there. So I can write this expression as g, there's a dx gamma here, g mu alpha of, so all of this is just a covariant divergence on beta of f alpha beta dx gamma. It had to be something we could write with a covariant derivative. It always will be because it's coordinate invariant. Knowing this identity, I don't want to do that. Well, if you really want to do it, I can. But it's another calculation. Let's get Maxwell's equation here, right? What is the covariant divergence of F alpha beta.
It's the fork current.
There we go. The inhomogeneous Maxwell equations. You can think Cartesian coordinates here, but this is just J alpha.
Right. When we wrote Maxwell's equations in four dimensions,
we just had a partial here. We were doing it in Minkowski space. This is the obvious way you might want to generalize that to general coordinates or even curved spaces. This is one of Maxwell's equations. So if we define another one form, we define J to be J alpha to be X alpha, then
we're not so worried. Actually, we can bring this inside, and
we don't even need to.
All right, G mu alpha d beta f alpha beta d x mu is equal to G mu alpha j alpha d x mu is equal to J mu dx mu equals J. So star G star F equals J. And that's the inhomogeneous Maxwell equation.
Writing
it. 5 minutes ago. Yeah.
Oh,
that's really me.